Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Got a bunch of constitutional issues to discuss with our friend Ilya Shapiro at the bottom of the hour, including a new, a bunch of new cases before the Supreme Court for their new session, which starts this week. But there's some other things, too. And, you know, he was supposed to be, Fred, at New York University with the Federalist Society.
Right.
I think they canceled it, but I think it's back on.
Yeah, they're supposed
it?
To work it out.
Okay, so we'll, you know, he's been controversial, if you will, at college campuses previously, but he'll join us at the bottom of the hour. Frank Cusimano with some MLB playoff information. The NFL was crazy this weekend. The Blues start the regular season this week. I think hockey officially starts tonight, right? And a couple other things sports related we'll get to, of course, Mizzou and Alabama, big game this week. But I wanted to get Dave Murray on just to talk about the forecast because it seems like, at least for a few days, Dave, it's going to turn a little more like fall, but then we got 80s back next weekend, it seems.
Yeah, it's a nice little stretch compared to where we've been, mid to upper 80s for about a week or so, well above average, but we're going to get back there. You know, 75 tomorrow, 53 tomorrow night, 75 Wednesday, 49 Wednesday night, Thursday 73, and then we're talking like kind of right around 80, 81, 82 degrees Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Full moon tonight, the full harvest moon. Ooh. It's the largest looking and the brightest of the year. So shine on,
ooh,
harvest moon.
Love that.
That's awesome. Yeah, these are pretty comfortable temperatures, though. Even if it's getting warm during the day, we're getting down into the 60s at night. Now, I think I saw like the low temperatures. Are we going to dabble with the 40s for a couple of nights?
Yeah. One night anyway. Wednesday night into Thursday morning could be upper 40s. The key to this warm stretch, and it is right now too, is the humidity levels have been very low, which is why we're not going to squeeze much moisture out of this front that's coming through.
Yep. I always point toward the old dew point. You know, I'm a dew point guy,
oh,
Dave.
Oh, boy.
So
that's right.
Kind of tell you what the dew point is right now if I looked at the dew point. Let me just pull that up here because I have
It's 62. It's 62, I believe.
I have 64.
Just trust Dave
Murray. We might
Murray
have to debate
that
on that.
62.
I have 64. I have a little higher dew point on my iPhone right now.
Okay.
But that's a good forecast. Here's one question. Are we ever going to get, I know there's a little bit of rain in the forecast, but good Lord, we need a little rain too.
Phew.
Yeah, we need quite a bit of rain. We're in a serious drought right now, but October, most, you know, what, 99% of our Octobers are bone dry. There's one that I can remember in the last 20 years where we were extremely wet, but it just doesn't happen very often. It is the harvest season, so it's kind of a two-edged sword. The farmers don't want any rain because they want to get the harvest in. And, you know, homeowners on the other side are saying, hey, we really need some rain, but it's not coming. It's just not coming.
All right, Dave Murray, thanks for the update this afternoon. I appreciate it.
You got it.
You know, I don't know if you remember, Sue, but I this was something that I self-anointed myself in my neighborhood.
Okay.
One of the we have 32, 33 houses on my block. I awarded myself top 5% lawn in the spring. I'm just declaring that, right?
Okay. You should make a little sign to put up in your yard.
Yeah,
that's a good idea,
there's
Fred.
There's nothing
I like
wrong
that
with that,
no.
Fred.
Oh, no,
no,
not
I like
at all.
That. Well, just take, you know, look, I think if anyone is, you know, objectively going through the neighborhood, they'd say boom, 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 and I was one of the nicest ones, right? That's just the front yard, I want to make clear, in case my neighbors are listening, because hey, dude, have you seen your backyard? Many of them haven't.
Yeah.
It's a little different. But so then I always get into this, and we have irrigation, so I'm watering, and my water bill's a bit outrageous. But I get that long grass, that nut grass that kicks in.
Oh, it's evil.
I hate it. But I think it was because the end of August and the beginning of September have been mild. My lawn, like I had True Green out last week to do aeration and the overseeding, and the dude says to my wife, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it because this is like one of the best lawns that I've seen.
Hey, that's nice.
So I'm going to put myself right now, front yard only.
Front yard only.
Top 5% of the homes in the neighborhood. And this is the first year. It's good, too, because I know people care about this tremendously and how I grow grass. But, Fred, you might remember I've gotten very skilled at the process of regrowing the grass in the fall because I used to just I'm dumb on so many things, but I used to think, hey, they're going to throw a bunch of grass seed back there when they aerate. It's just going to grow up magically. Well, you kind of have to have a little mixture of the soil in there. So I really got good at it, right? And last year I grew so much new grass from the dead spots. Well, because it was so cool, I'm just guessing, at the end of August, beginning of September, the grass never was as in bad a shape as it was in past years. And it looks phenomenal. Even in the back, not too bad. But I couldn't do the grass growing with the soil because I'm worried the puppy is going to get all that dirt and then bring it into my house.
Well, he probably will.
So anyway,
well,
feel
just
good about
award
the
yourself the front yard and it's okay.
I'm
Fred,
taking it.
How do you rank in the neighborhood?
Well, I'll tell you this. My grass, I have every variety possible of grass in my front yard. Just you name it, it's in there.
You got a little zoysia,
oh,
you got
yeah.
a little Kentucky
oh, yeah.
blue.
You can tell when the lawnmower slows down that you're hitting something
hit a thick
you
patch.
Be.
Yeah, yeah. Right. yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I had zoysia in Wisconsin. It was so weird. I don't think a lot of people had it up there, but my front lawn was just completely brown in the fall and the winter with it all. But then in the, you know, when it was green and really lush, it looked pretty good. Hey, you're not, I'm going to take a stab here and I think I'm safe. You're not going to be talking about the band Rush during Sue's News,
that
are
That is
you?
Correct.
All right, here we go. Because I am right now. Have you heard the news today?
Monday,
I know you hate Rush, which is another reason why I have to do this. And the last time I saw Rush at the amphitheater, we went as kind of a guys trip, me and a bunch of friends. And I think there were only about three women at the whole place, like 19,000 people there, maybe three or four women.
I didn't know it was such a thing because I really have no use for them.
I like them, but, you know, it's not like they're at the top of my bands that I still listen to or anything like that.
No, but the guys love them. The men love them, and I didn't realize that I was not
well,
alone
like,
in
it's
the
like
women
it's
category.
A Keishi. Come on, it's like a Keishi thing.
Yeah.
And I, look,
I like Keishi. I'm just not Rush.
I get it. I don't think my wife puts on Tom Sawyer very much, but I bring it up because, look, Neil Peart, and we all pronounce his name incorrectly for four decades, but Neil Peart, the drummer, who, man, I was so lucky. I one time, true story, was on stage at the old Checkerdome from the side of the stage watching Rush play and watching Neil Peart play his drums, and it was unbelievable. I only met Geddy Lee that night, but it was really a special night seeing that band back then in like 1983 or 1984. So in March, they released Rush 50, which is a greatest hits collection, and it ended with the final songs that they played at their final concert in 2015. So Neil Peart died in 2020, in January 2020. And so all this time, I think most people would assume, well, he's such a big part of that, you know, threesome. It's just three guys. We're not going to tour again. But they're going to do it. And I guess that Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson are returning to the stage for a headlining tour. Annika Niles is an award-winning German composer and producer who has toured with Jeff Beck and has released four solo albums and will be drumming for Rush. Now, that's an unusual name, isn't it? I got to see. Wouldn't you say that that is a woman, not a man? But I think it's a man. Annika. It's a woman.
Oh, really?
How cool is that? Yeah, look at her. Okay, so I'm glad
so
I checked
Annika,
on that.
So that's Annika, right? When do you pronounce it Annika?
What did I say? Annika?
Annika? Yeah. But I don't know that's for
no,
sure.
No, I think it is. So that's really something, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the tour is dubbed 50-something. It's described as a celebration of Rush's music legacy and the life of the late drummer and lyricist Neil Peart. It's slated to hit seven cities. Now, here's the bad news. It's not coming here to St. Louis. Usually, I would take that as a slight. In this particular case, I don't think it's a slight because it's really just the big markets that they're doing, right? So they're doing two shows in Chicago. They're doing some in Canada. Let's see here. It starts in L.A. on June 7th. This is all for next year. Two shows at the Kia Forum. They go to Mexico City. They go to Dallas-Fort Worth for two shows. The United Center, July 16th and 18th for two shows. Madison Square Garden for two shows. Scotiabank Arena in Toronto for two shows. And then Cleveland, the Rocket Arena. That one kind of throws me because maybe they'll add more. St. Louis is a Rush town.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the documentary that's out there about them, they give immense amount of credit for their popularity to Keishi. and to St. Louis. So I'd be a little disappointed. That Cleveland one-off throws me off because you would think that we would be there. But if ticket sales go well.
Rock and roll Hall of Fame sort of thing.
Could be. Being located there.
Yeah.
But man, I'd be hard pressed to think that St. Louis is not going to get a rush date if they expand that tour. But we'll see. I know Sue is very excited. So
gosh, I hope so.
I know. They're pretty good live. Last time I saw them live. And now the chick drummer, that just fascinates me even more, I think.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I don't have anything by Rush, the group.
See,
I got three books by Rush Limbaugh.
Nothing in your collection from Rush the Group.
Huh,
no.
But now I want to find out something more about this drummer because look, Neil Peart's put in the hierarchy of skill when it comes to drummers of all time.
Now I had looked it up when you were talking about that, and I'm assuming she had to try out. I mean, I'm sure there was extensive, and they say here, watch her go on. I'm sure it's on YouTube. They didn't say where, and watch her in action. It must be something.
See, I'm going to do that now. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I read that news release this morning,
after the show.
It didn't really. Well,
thanks,
yeah.
Fred.
That's
or
what
at least
I mean.
After okay. Sue's
I'm
news.
Not going to do it right this moment. Yes, but I will do it for sure because now I'm even more intrigued. So, St. Louis fans, you'll have to go to.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chicago. Yeah, we got some good playoff baseball tonight and the Chiefs and the Jaguars on Monday Night Football. Frank Cusumano will weigh in on that coming up here a little bit later this hour.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News, presented by U.S. Men's Medical Center.
It still makes me laugh. Okay. Over the weekend, I did the Tour de Wildwood, right, on the bicycle, and I hadn't been out in a while, and I got a new carbon bike. It's nice and light, and I thought, this is great. Well, you know, I forgot how hilly it is. It's brutal. So I was on. I had to walk the thing like four times.
Really,
I mean, I'm just an idiot. So on the last one, it's so hilly, and I'm walking this thing up there, and then in the background, I hear, and two e-bikes go sailing by with ancient people on them.
See? Uh-huh. And you sold your e-bike.
Yeah, I did. But I will get another one, but I want a Le Monde, and they're expensive, and I'll have to wait. And plus, I'll wait for it to get even lighter. But there's nothing more disheartening than walking and looking pitiful up a giant hill and two old people going by.
Okay, I'll tell you what's a lot worse than that.
What?
Is walking up a giant hill when some dude older than you passes you on the bike that's not an e-bike, because that's happened to me in the past, too.
That's true. Well, that's already happened, Mark. I was at the back. There was nobody left but the e-people.
You might find this hard to believe, and maybe the people who are listening right now who rode with me would challenge me on this, but I used to be pretty good at climbing those hills out there.
Well, I don't doubt it. You're a thin person, and you were really into it. You probably were all hilled up at the time. All right.
Well, I was doing steroids every week in my ass, too, taking that shot. Did whatever I could to impersonate Lance Armstrong. Damn right.
Oh, gosh. Well, it was fun, but I was destroyed by it.
Sleeping in an oxygen chamber at night. You have no idea. The sacrifices that I made.
Gave up Diet Coke.
Did you?
No, well, I never did that. No.
He's not crazy, Fred.
You know what's funny about that, though, is there was somebody that one morning, this is a true story, made a crack about my Diet Coke. Oh, why do you put that poison in? And I'm just like, F you.
Oh, charming.
Like, it didn't go very well that morning. It was someone I didn't know very well, and they were attacking me for my Diet Coke. I'm like, really?
Yeah, people need to learn to just stay in their lane.
That's the one area in my life you don't touch. It's my Diet Coke, all right?
Well, it's National Noodle Day. I hope we're all excited about that. National Coaches Day. National German-American Day. And National Plus Size Appreciation Day.
Really?
Say, there you have it. It's quite a bit. Now, on this day in history,
how do we celebrate National Plus Size?
Well, they've got models with them everywhere.
Right.
Now.
I go to
Maybe
Target.
That's it.
Okay.
Maybe that's it.
I was just wondering if there was any special way to commemorate that tonight.
Probably the same way you celebrate National German American Day.
They may tie in, yes.
I'm not sure. On this day in history, 56 years ago, it was in 1969 that for the first time, a George Harrison song was put on the A side of a Beatles single. This is it.
I like George. I like George even more that I watched that, you know, documentary that was on Disney Plus a couple years ago, because he really...
I never saw that.
You have to watch that because you really get to see him behind the scenes, and it's fascinating. My friend out in Las Vegas, Rick, went to see McCartney at Allegiant Stadium on Saturday night. I think he's 83, and Rick said he's still got it.
That's
so
awesome.
So it was a good show.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Can you guess what the B-side was of this? It's a Lennon McCartney song. Something went on to hit number one, by the way. The B-side, I don't know how you're going to get it.
I don't know. It
went number one a month later.
Okay.
Come Together.
Oh.
So, good for George.
Yeah, usually
56 years
the way
ago.
They used to put records out, well, it's a little different, I think, back in the 60s. But the A-side used to be the A-side, and the B-side never used to be anywhere close to an A-side that would be a hit.
Right.
But that's fascinating. You had two big hits like that.
I know. I think so, too. And then 5 years ago, it's been 5 years since Eddie Van Halen passed away. And that was obviously 2020. He was 65 years old. And I follow Valerie Bertinelli, of course I do, on Instagram. And she put up a nice video today of Wolfie playing and Eddie watching him sing. And he's got a big smile on his face. It's just really nice to see. But I just can't believe it was 5 years ago. All right, there is a report out in the Financial Times that asks if we have passed peak social media. A digital audience insights company looked at data from more than 250,000 adults from 50 countries and found that time spent on social media peaked in 2022 and has since gone down in a steady decline. Across the world's adults 16 and older are spending an average of 2 hours 20 minutes per day on social platforms, but that's actually down by 10% since 2022. The sharpest decline is among teens and 20-somethings, although they say millennials and some Gen Xers seem to be deleting their accounts. But tech experts say users have been basically pushed out by actual socialness and connectedness and replaced it with so many ads that some people just can't take it anymore. They think that's part of it. And negative posts and more stupidity.
Well, I think a lot of it, like, I can only speak for a couple of the platforms because I use Instagram and I like Instagram, and I don't see people, you know, doing politics on Instagram for the most part. The people people who have jobs that are like me or whatever, they may do their posts up there. But I think a lot of people, myself included, have really backed off from Facebook because everyone puts their opinions on there, and I just want to put my bunny pictures and my puppy pictures and pictures of my daughter. So I think a lot of people are fatigued by a lot of the stuff that's going on in the news cycle. Twitter the same way.
I agree, but there's one place in the world where social media isn't in free fall, and that's in North America.
Oh.
So we are the exception to the world.
Oh, I see. Well, I don't know if that's good, though. That's
I don't
not
think
good.
It is. The report says consumption of social media's diet of extreme rhetoric, engagement bait, and it just continues to climb, but they're hoping that America is now at our peak and that it will finally go down.
So what are we replacing it with?
I don't know,
social
Fred. God forbid you
streaming?
Actually talk to someone. I yeah. don't know. Meta and OpenAI have announced new social platforms that will be filled with AI-generated short-form videos. Get out now. That's my thought, but we'll see what happens. Okay, the documentary that we kind of all want to see, John Candy, I Like Me, comes out
Friday
on Prime.
Can't wait.
I can't wait either. John Candy, as you know, Mark and I love him for his character in Uncle Buck. That's our total favorite. But his son, Christopher, shared some of John's lost roles in a recent interview, and he said, quote, he got sent a script for Pulp Fiction. John
really?
Candy in Pulp Fiction, which would have been bizarre. That's
well, Quentin likes to get people to play against type, so I'd like to know a little bit more about that.
That's true.
That could have been more interesting, maybe, than you think.
The John Travolta role?
I don't know which one, whether it be Samuel L.
I'll look into that because that's kind of interesting.
There's also his driver told his son that he was up to be in Goodfellas. And he actually screen tested for it. The son says there's footage of him looking kind of like a tough gangster guy. And they were so shocking to me. I was like, whoa, that would have been completely different John Candy than the one I knew. But his son was only 9 when
But I'm so ready for this documentary. We need a documentary like this.
Agreed.
They're all very serious. Yes. I watched this one over the weekend that's on Hulu about this chick, Amy, in room 603 that disappeared and was killed and all that. And that's kind of depressing.
It is.
Yeah.
And finally, at Sue's News, we have today's random fact. This is bizarre. Canada, California, and Tokyo all have similar populations. Canada's current population, 41.5 million. Tokyo, 41 million. California, 39.4. Oh. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And that's it for Sue's
News. I'd say we just give California its own country and just keep them separate.
We're headed that way.
Yeah, maybe. All right, thanks, Sue. Ilya Shapiro coming up.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I'm told the producing team is trying to get Ilya Shapiro on the line, but this gives me an opportunity to play a little audio that I wanted to get to on a Monday. Monday's always jammed up because we have stuff that lingers from the weekend and then is created throughout the course of Monday as well. But this is pretty good. This was Bill Maher on his show over the weekend, and he's talking about Kamala's book. 107 Days is the name of the book. She's out there. She's doing interviews. Bill Maher calls it exactly the way he sees it. This is why I like him. At least somebody on the left who calls it the way they see it. Here's what he said about 107 days.
Kamala Harris's new memoir, 24 Election, is called 107 Days. But it should have been called Everyone Sucks But Me.
Oh, that was actually the shorter one. I wanted to play the longer version here. I think you'll hear it here.
Kamala Harris's new memoir of the 24 Election is called 107 Days. But it should have been called Everyone Sucks But Me.
Yeah, he gets her pretty good here on the fact that she does, and you know, this has sort of emerged in the last couple of weeks with this book tour. There's a lot of blame game going on. None of it is being put on herself.
"107 Days" is a victim's title because, get it, she only had 107 days to win. Yeah, and $1.5 billion, and a built-in army of about 75 million people who'd vote for any human-adjacent life form that wasn't Trump.
Well, I can't believe, you know, we didn't really focus on this, but I honestly can't believe that that's the title of the book, 107 Days. It sounds kind of like someone would just, you know, put that as the fake name before we come up with a real name. But that's what they called it, and Bill Maher's having none of it.
In 107 days, nothing is ever Kamala's fault. Biden lets her down by not stepping down sooner. Pouty face emoji. Gavin Newsom, he was asked for his endorsement, but texted, "Hiking, we'll call back." But then never did. And then he didn't even ask her to prom. America itself lets Kamala down by not being ready for the running mate she really wanted, Pete Buttigieg. So she's stuck with the Home Depot paint salesman.
Ouch.
And the rest is herstory. Poor Kamala. We made her the star of a rom-com and didn't even give her a gay best friend. Kamala writes that on election night, when it was clear she lost, an aide peeled the words "Madam President" off the cupcakes before handing them out. Oh, geez, that's like a scene from Bridget Jones Runs for President.
I hadn't heard that, if that was a little nugget. So Bill had some fun with that. Now, Sue, are you familiar with the Jay Jones controversy out in Virginia?
No.
This is quite something. You know, we like Winsome Sears quite a bit. Winsome Sears is the lieutenant governor, and she had a great story when she ran, and we, I think we had her on when she did her book. Fred was in the room here a moment ago. But she's running against Abigail Spanberger for governor. And there's a guy who is the Virginia Attorney General's candidate named Jay Jones, who, it was revealed over the weekend, had some messages that were private messages that were then public messages. I don't know how this happens. I mean, people, essentially people you trust, have to be willing to take the screen captures of the messages that you sent and then, you know, reveal them to the media, which is what happened in this particular spot. So Winsome Sears comes up, and I'll give you a little bit more detail here. She does an ad. They turn an ad on this real quick because they're trying to seize this moment. This race between Winsome and Abigail Spanberger is pretty close. So what the Republicans are going to do here is say, hey, this Jay Jones, who's a Democrat, this is reflective of what the Democrats do in our state.
We start with breaking news from the campaign trail.
Jay Jones is under fire tonight.
Jay Jones is under fire.
Jay Jones is under fire after messages he sent 2022, saying former Virginia House Speaker Todd Gilbert should be shot.
I'm excited about this ticket.
It's been great to be out on the campaign trail with Jay Jones.
You said Gilbert's wife could watch her own child die in her arms so that Gilbert might reconsider his political views.
We deserve an attorney general who will stand up for the people of Virginia.
All right, so I'll play that here in a second, a little bit more of that. But the speaker at that point was a guy by the name of Todd Gilbert. He's a Republican. So what Jay Jones did, and I guess he sent this to Kerry Corner, who is a Republican out there. Probably not smart for a Democrat to send this to a colleague who is a Republican. But he wrote in the text message exchange, if then House Speaker Todd Gilbert, Adolf Hitler, and Cambodian dictator Pol Pot were the three choices, he wrote, Gilbert gets two bullets to the head. Spoiler, put Gilbert in the crew with the two worst people you know, and he receives both bullets every time. He also said that he would urinate on the future graves of his political opponents and evoked Gilbert's wife and children in the text message exchange with Coyner, saying the couple was evil and that they were breeding little fascists, according to copies of the text. Now, this was first reported by the National Review on Friday. Jones, in a statement, said he's embarrassed, ashamed, and sorry about the text, but said that he's going to stay in the race. So a little bit more of the ad here.
Jones said, quote, Gilbert, Hitler, and Pol Pot. Gilbert gets two bullets to the head.
Let the rage fuel you.
Jones doubled down, saying, quote, do I think Todd and Jennifer are evil and that they're breeding little fascists? Yes.
How can Virginians trust a man who said something so horrific, so callously?
Only when people feel pain personally do they move on policy.
Wow. So that's a powerful ad, and there's video component of that, which probably makes it just a little less powerful through the speakers that you're listening to right now. But that's a hell of an ad that they turned around very quickly. Now, again, he's not running for governor, but they're trying to use this politically to their advantage because Spanberger, who is the favorite in the race, although the polling has been tightening, is a Democrat as well. So here is Winsome Sears' message to Virginians.
It's gone too far. You can't call a woman who looks like me racist and then dial back the rhetoric. You can't do what Jay Jones did, text about killing a Republican politician and his kids, and then dial back the rhetoric. You can't pretend they, them is a pronoun and then wonder how people lose touch with reality. And you can't normalize radical policies and prejudices that lead people to kill those they disagree with.
So, I mean, I don't know how you stay in a race when stuff like that comes out, right? He says that he did an interview with one of the outlets out there, WRIC, and he said that he had contacted Gilbert to apologize to him, his wife, Jennifer, and their children. And he said, and I should probably pull the audio of this, but he said in that interview, they're angry and furious, and they're well within their bounds to feel that way because what I said was unacceptable, and I accept responsibility for that. I understand the gravity of what I said. I'm so apologetic for it from the bottom of my heart. That's fine. Here's the next statement. And I'm withdrawing from the attorney's general's
right.
race, the attorney general's
right.
race, because I feel like maybe there should be higher standards for someone who's going to be the chief law enforcement person in the state of Virginia, right? So I guess what happened was is National Review reports on a phone call between Jones and Coyner following some of the texts. And, you know, Coyner's the one that revealed the text messages. National Review paraphrased Jones as arguing that the only way policy changes is when policymakers feel pain themselves, like the pain that parents feel when they watch their children die from gun violence. Then at one point, this is what the source says, he suggests that he wished Gilbert's wife could watch her own child die in her arms so that Gilbert might reconsider his political views. So this is even worse than, you know, the messages appear to be. In the interview the other night, he was asked whether he had said that. And his answer was, bottom line, that language is unacceptable. I deeply, deeply wish it hadn't happened. That does not sound like a denial, right? He says, I have spent the entire day really regretting all of it, and I certainly wish that it hadn't happened. I'm sick to my stomach when I read those words, and certainly they're objectionable. They're abhorrent. They have no place in Virginia, no place in the country's discourse. And so, again, I'm so deeply, deeply sorry, and I wish I wouldn't have done it. But he goes on to say, these politicians, they're something else. They really are. I mean, I've seen... one of the most amazing things that I ever saw was, God, now I can't even remember the damn name. He was the mayor of Milwaukee, and he was one of the most arrogant people I had ever met in my entire life.
Wow. Right?
How can I not remember his name? And he had an incident with a pretty high-level staffer. He's married at the time. His wife is pregnant, right?
Oh, no.
He has an incident that had happened in the past that then becomes a lawsuit. This is Me Too, way before Me Too. And this is R-rated. What I'm about to tell you is R-rated. So if you have kids in the car, you may want to turn it down. Sue, you're not going to probably appreciate this, but it's just an example of how bold, and bold's not even the answer here. So this guy goes up and does a news conference in the aftermath of these allegations, one of which is that he wanted to have sex with the woman who was suing him, but when she was on her period, he chose anal sex.
Oh, okay.
Yes. This is all in the lawsuit. But what was even more egregious is, it's one thing that it happened, that the accusations happened and the incident happened. He pulls his poor wife up there, who's like 8 months pregnant, to apologize to people when that's out there in the media. I mean, first of all, I don't know how.
What in the world?
This is what this is. This guy. Think about this guy. It's the same thing. They're so arrogant, because he goes on to say in his message, he goes, you know, this is a mistake, but he would grow from it as we head toward this election on November 4th. You're going to grow from that? Are you kidding me? Wishing that, you know, Gilbert's kid would die so they have perspective on gun violence? I'm at a loss when it comes to politics in this country. All right, we got a lot of sports to talk about with Frank Cusumanos, who's with us this afternoon. First and foremost, maybe primarily the Chiefs and the Jaguars tonight. The Jaguars are not too bad. They're 3-1, so this is an opportunity for the Chiefs to improve on the season from 2-2. How are you this afternoon, Frank?
Doing well. Yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight's game, hoping for Harrison Buckner from my fantasy league team to get a lot of field goals. That's what my big interest in it. But the Jaguars, under their new coach, Liam Cohen, really a kind of a creative team. They're finally bringing the best out of their quarterback. This should be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, this was a crazy NFL weekend, wasn't it? I mean, it was kind of a crazy football weekend overall, with college football with some big upsets as well. But yesterday, I mean, now we have no undefeated teams. The Bills fell. Last night was pretty interesting, obviously, with
Eagles.
Them and with the Patriots. Yeah, the Eagles fall. There were some real surprises yesterday. That's what I love about the NFL, though.
And there's no doubt about it, the most devastating loss, I think, maybe in the history of the Cardinals. And Lord knows we know the football Cardinals have had devastating losses. But to see that Amari DiMarcado all alone for that 71-yard touchdown, he gets to the goal line, he drops the ball. That would have put the game away. And then there was that Dadrian Taylor, Demerson pickoff of Cam Ward, but he fumbles, the ball's kicked, and Tyler Lockett recovers for a Titan touchdown. What a freaking game.
Yeah, that play there, it almost looks like it's so weird, it looks like it was scripted, because it's like the ball is going from one end to another.
I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but Dave Casper, the great tight end for the Raiders, had a play like that where he was going to get tackled, and he intentionally fumbled, and the Raiders just kicked it in, and they eventually got a touchdown. It was unbelievable.
Let's talk a little baseball here, Frank. Do you know why you had two series that opened in the National League on Saturday and then they got yesterday off? Was that just because of TV and the NFL, or because they got the byes? Because the Brewers and the Cubs play, but they don't play till today.
Yeah, I think the thing that shocked me is that Friday – it was a dead day for sports, and for baseball to not capitalize at all on that seems kind of ridiculous. Now, I know being in television that Friday is supposed to be the least watched television day, but if I'm a sport and I know I can't compete with the NFL and the NFL's not playing on Friday, there's no college football on Friday, I definitely try to play on that day.
Seemed weird to me as well, but let's focus on the positive. The Cubs got their asses handed to them, didn't they?
Yes, I think everybody in St. Louis, although we're not passionate Brewers fans, we'd all want to see Milwaukee win that series. I know you have a vested interest there.
Yeah, I'll root for them. I didn't see any of that game. I didn't watch any baseball over the weekend. I think I'm going to watch some tonight. Ethan, you got something?
Yeah, it feels like it's snuck up on us, and I think you mentioned it earlier, Mark, but, I mean, hockey is here. I mean, tonight is the opening night for the NHL, and the Blues get things started on Thursday, hosting the Minnesota Wild. I'm sure I'll see you at the game, Frank. What do you take of the Blues this year? Obviously, a sour ending to 2024-25, but I think there's a lot of optimistic things that they're building here with this group that they have, and some high expectations for the upcoming year.
Yeah, I said this before. I just wish we could fast forward 1 year. And then we may have a team that has a Stanley Cup, you know, championship aspiration. Because I think, like, they're definitely better this year than they were last year because we know that Broberg and Holloway are really, really good players. And Kyrou and Thomas are still going to be in that, you know, the prime of their careers. I, you know, wish we were a year further along in Snuggerud. Bottom line is, they're like a, I think they're like a 5-8 best team in the Western Conference. And then with all this youth, they're just going to keep getting better and better. They just got to make sure that, you know, Jordan Binnington doesn't prematurely age. But I think it's a loaded group.
If you had to name one player that you're looking at this year and saying he's the one that needs to be the guy or needs to take the big step in order for the Blues to get to that cup window, who would it be?
You know, I almost think it's Dylan Holloway, who made a big step last year, but he's the guy, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but at the end of practice, everybody goes in and he's out there for a half hour. Mm-hmm. Doug Armstrong told me last night on Sports Plus that he'll go up to Send Team Community Ice Center for a workout on a Sunday, or he'll be up in his office typing away and he'll look down and he'll hear shots. He doesn't have to look down anymore because he knows it's Holloway shooting. So he's coming off a terrible injury, but he's looked great in camp. I'm wondering, is he a 35 goal scorer? So he'd be a guy to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Frank, have a good week. We'll know a lot more about where the baseball playoffs are heading, and we'll preview the Mizzou-Alabama game. What I told Ethan this afternoon, I'm a little uncomfortable with moving up that much in the rankings because you didn't play and because of all the other losses, but that should be a hell of a game. We'll talk on Friday.
Sounds great.
All right,
take care.
Thanks, Frank.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.